And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Hello, everyone. Today's Wednesday, June 26th. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Gino. I'm here with Darren. Kevin has the night off tonight. Please listen to us anywhere you get your podcast. Like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook. Give us a like. Give us a share. Join our Facebook page. Important. We want everybody on that page right now. Send us a couple of questions, thoughts. We'll respond to you. We'll get to you. Today on the show, Mets are playing very well, although they're going to be playing their next little stretch without their closer. Yanks are not playing well. They're trying to get past this little injury bug. It's spread. Scheffler continues his magic. The Knicks make a big trade. And the Florida Panthers win their first Stanley Cup in 30 years. We're going to start right there. It's their first Stanley Cup in their 30-year history. Surprisingly, and we'll get to it, Connor McDavid winds up winning the MVP, the Conn Smythe of the playoffs, not Bobrovsky. Game 7, Darren, a lot of Oiler jerseys in the arena. I was very surprised when they were scanning the crowd. First period, it's a great goal by Voorhage. It's a beautiful tip-in as the penalty expired. It makes it 1-0 Florida. Jammar comes back about a minute and a half later. It's a great goal from a breakaway from the blue line. It was a fifth straight breakaway goal against Bobrovsky, by the way. Florida wound up playing a very physical first period, but the shots on goal are only Florida 7, Edmonton 6. The score's only 1-1. So for all of what they played, you're dead even after one. Right at the buzzer, by the way, at 1959, Skinner makes a hell of a save. Basically,
don't know if it would have been good or not. It was close.
If that goes in, it would have been real close.
It would have been reviewed. It would have been close.
Connor McDavid, by the way, no shots in the first period there. Okay. We get to the second period. Around the five-minute mark, Edmonton has a power play, which they dominate in the Florida end. They only wind up getting two shots on goal on the whole power play, and almost the whole 2 minutes was in their end. It was a lot of setups, not enough shots, my opinion. We'll get to there in a couple of minutes. At 15 and 11, we get a goal by Reinhart. It's right in front of Skinner. There's traffic. He wasn't screened, but there's a lot of traffic going on in front. Florida takes a 2-1 lead. Shots on goal after two. Florida's only up 17-15. We get to the third period. Florida kind of starts dominating a little bit with that defensive style. A good part of the period, they're dominating that defensive style. But then as we get to about the 14-minute mark, I think desperation starts setting in with Edmonton, and now they're controlling the puck a lot. They get a lot. They get a number of shots on goal in their end. But we get to the last 3 minutes of that game. The Edmonton stars, and we're talking McDavid and Draisaitl, Hyman, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Bouchard on defense, they are exhausted. And you could tell as we get to the last minute of the period, they are completely exhausted. They're wiped out. They have no burst of speed left. And listen, I get that the coach had to play him a lot in the third period, but you can't leave them to the point where they are completely shot for the last minute and a half. Last minute and a half is when you're pulling your goalie, you got the extra attacker on, you're basically on a 6-on-5. You can't have your guys completely exhausted at that point. What, Darren, so listen, Florida winds up winning 2-1. It's a great win. Bobrovsky, who didn't look good in games 4, 5, 6, played excellent in game 7. Listen, Skinner played a great game too. I'm not taking anything away from him. But Florida winds up winning 2-1 and they hoist the Stanley Cup. Darren, what do you think?
Thought it was great hockey, actually. Thought it was an entertaining game, back and forth. Clearly, you could easily see how these were the two best teams in the NHL and how they got to their spot. We'll get to the Conn Smythe in a couple of minutes because I don't agree with it. But beside that, you know, you a lot of the details you gave, very, very accurate. The goal Skinner gave up is one I'm sure he wants back.
Absolutely.
It's not a good goal, okay?
No, it's
but
not.
Skinner played great, but that wasn't a good goal. Yep. And it didn't beat him high. It just beat him. It just beat him inside the post, and he just missed it. And Skinner, who I've been criticizing for the better part of 3 years, actually came on very strong in the playoffs and played well for the most part after some struggles in the first two rounds. He really seemed to put it together. The exhaustion on the front line is it's inexcusable. The fact of the matter is, and Knobloch has enough horses on set lines 2 and 3 to eat enough time. There's no reason to double shift them immediately. There's no deep reason to double shift them the entire third period. You're down a goal. You're not down 4-1. You're down 2-1. So you keep guys fresh because you need those last 3 minutes. Can you imagine McDavid fresh with 3 minutes to go, the amount of pressure he could have put on Florida? They couldn't skate up. They couldn't move the puck up. Bob was great. Don't get me wrong. He was outstanding. But down the stretch, it looked like, you know, Edmonton, you know, from about the 9 minute mark to the 3 minute mark, looked like they were on fire. And from the 3 minute mark down, it looked like they couldn't get out of their own end. I mean, they did. They gained the zone, but not really. Biggest thing in this series to me, Draisaitl, no goals. Yeah. Okay. Doesn't put a puck in, had 3 assists. Hyman, 2 goals and 2 assists. And take away the route in Game 5, and Hyman doesn't score a goal.
Yeah.
Either, right? So that's the whole thing. I mean, my problem with the Conn Smythe is they're really basing a lot off games, you know, 5 and 6 in the playoff, which I think is a little ridiculous. G?
So let's get into that in a minute. So Connor McDavid winds up winning. He winds up with the 4th most points in a postseason, 8 goals, 34 assists with 42 points, okay?
And he's the best player in the world, most exciting guy to watch, all that stuff.
But I'm going right to your point. So I'm going to tell you the 3 people ahead of him with the most points in a postseason. It's Gretzky at 43, Lemieux at 44, and Gretzky at 47. Okay, that's the 3. Okay, so just the company he's in is immense. Okay,
in less games, in less games,
and Connor McDavid had 11 points in the Stanley Cup, which is 2 shy of Gretzky's record. Okay, but here it is. Right, if he has 1 point in that game, okay, to tie the game with a goal, to tie the game with an assist, I think all of a sudden now, even if they wind up losing in overtime, he may deserve it. But you can't have him at 42 points, the 4th most in postseason history, come up with a 0 in Game 7 and your team lose. You can't, and then hand him the Conn Smythe. To me, I agree with you. It's ridiculous. It really is. And listen, he has... And here is the ultimate, right? If he has 2 points in Game 7 and they win, okay?
Yep.
He winds up tying Gretzky with the most points in the Stanley Cup and basically winds up with tying Mario Lemieux for the 2nd most points in a postseason. And now we're talking immense, but it's the 4th most. So you're not hitting Gretzky and Lemieux, okay? It's not the most in a Stanley Cup. You're 2 shy of Gretzky, and you come up with a 0 in Game 7. Listen, I could not believe that Bobrovsky did not get it, because that's who I thought deserved that. I really did.
First and foremost, the trophy has to be renamed. It has to be It's not about the entire playoffs. It's about the championship round. It can't be about the entire playoffs. You're going to tell me that there was anybody more valuable than Shesterkin for his team? You could sit there and say the same about Bob for his team. You could say it about McDavid for his team. You could say Ottinger and Dow. I mean, you could sit there and say, oh, without this guy. I'm just saying the whole encompassing of the entire playoff is a little bit ridiculous. You want to do it by round, I don't give a shit. But you don't really need to do it, you know, and try to encapsulate 4 rounds for this award. This should be the most outstanding player of the championship series. And that probably goes to Bob. And he was awful in game 4? He got lit up in game 5 or 4. I forget which one.
He got
lit up. But yeah, they got lit up 8-1.
Yeah.
And that obviously hurts his stats. I mean, there's a lot of things that are wrong with this. First and foremost, you know, I don't like a losing player winning it. and not a losing skating player. You could sit there and watch a goalie stand on his head and keep a team in it and, you know, lose a bunch of games 1-0 because his team can't score. And you're like, he was peppered with 800 shots and his team only had 100. You know, you can sit there and argue with all that stuff and it absolutely is fine. But when you sit there and go with a position player that gets blanked in game 7 in the biggest game of the year, doesn't even have a shot in the first period, can't mount an attack in the third period, he doesn't deserve to be the most outstanding player.
It's the sixth time that a losing player has won it, and it's the first time that a skater has won it, non-goalie, since 1976 when Reggie Leach won it. That's how far back,
right? That was the Leafs, I think, right?
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, and you know, how often do we talk about Reggie Leach?
Yeah.
I'm just saying, you know, it's not even like a stat anybody even cares about. He shouldn't have won it. He does. Listen, I mean, it's over. He showed a lot. They're trying to give the award to Florida, the teams on the ice, and then they announce him. What's he supposed to do, skate out there? Actually, I thought McDavid was pretty classy not skating out there and letting Florida have their moment.
I agree.
I just think that hockey does so many things ass backwards. The league can't end at the end of June when it's 90-something degrees in the Northeast. Do you know why there were so many Edmonton fans in there? Because that's a horrible fan base. They don't sell out Dolphins games. They don't sell out, they sell out Panthers games every now and again, but usually if there's a decent crowd that comes in for visiting. They don't sell out games at the Heat. They don't sell out games on a regular basis with the Marlins. They've always been a weak fan franchise. And why? Because you got everything going on down there. You got beautiful weather. Who wants to sit in a stadium and then go to the beach? You know, I'm not blaming the fans. They just don't care as much. Well, Edmonton, this is their entire life. This is all they got.
Exactly.
A city of 2 million people, they're coming down there and they want to celebrate. Got the girl that flashed everybody. That was a big deal. You got a bunch of things happening with Oil Town there. But the fact of the matter is you can't play it this late. If hockey's smart, which they're not, and they'll never do it, figure out a way to start toward latter part of September, end the season by April 1st, add an extra game to each part of everybody's schedule like every second or third week, and knock this thing out and own April where nothing's going on outside of a weekend at the Masters and a little bit of, opening day of baseball, but you can get around and try to take away get the casual fan to watch your sport. That's how you're going to grow it. Playoff hockey's awesome. Listen,
it was awesome.
And you might disagree with me. I can watch any football game between any two teams, anywhere, anytime, right? I can't do that with baseball. If I don't have an interest in the game, I'm probably not staying for 9 innings. Maybe put it on there, get some scores, but not the same thing. I really can't do that with the NBA. It doesn't do it for me. But I can do it with hockey. I can put on two teams and watch a game, and if they're playing competitively, I can be glued to it. The thing is that we don't give it enough of a chance when it's going head-to-head with the NBA playoffs at the same time, which is unfortunately a more popular sport with the youth. So you need to get that turned around. Bettman, wake up. You can control the entire month of April. There's no reason why you don't do it. You know, yeah. And then your titles at the end of May, while the NBA is still going through the end of their first round and beginning of the second round, whatever it is, then you're done. And then you have a month for everybody to get excited about the draft, and then they're building up to this. But instead, the league ends on Tuesday or whatever, or Monday, and you have to draft on Friday. They can't even build up on this draft. They have nothing. Just weak, in my opinion.
All right. We will move over to the NBA next. So leading up to yesterday, a couple of things happened in the NBA. The Lakers hired J.J. Redick. The Bulls made a trade. They traded Alex Caruso to Oklahoma City for Josh Giddey, and Malik Monk stayed with the Kings. And then last night happened and set the Knicks universe on fire. The Knicks trade Bojan Bogdanovic and 5 first round picks, one first round pick swap, and a second round pick to the Nets for Mikal Bridges. The Knicks also get a 2026 second round pick. this is a huge, this is huge. And to show that they were in control of the situation, which I love, they basically have signed OG Anunoby now to a 5-year, $212 million contract. Mm-hmm. So he's now here also. And the makings of what this roster is going to look like all of a sudden looks really good. Well, let's talk about the roster in a minute. What do you think of the actual trade itself, Darren?
I actually thought it was pretty good for both teams. The Nets were either going to mire themselves in lower mediocrity or they're going to try to do something. Now, none of these draft picks are going to be really, really high, okay? If the Knicks don't get a ton of injuries, you're looking at picks in the 20s and hopefully for the Knicks fans, picks in the 30s, you know? I mean, that's what you're hoping for. But the fact of the matter is that the Nets had to do something to retool. The Knicks get the quartet of Villanova now. Now they get the guy that they wanted, the guy that they've been soliciting. Didn't think the Nets would trade him to the Knicks. Didn't think they would make the Knicks better across town. I thought it was a really weird place to send him. But they did get they didn't get a great haul, but they got a good enough haul where you could say that this trade is probably slight edge to the Nets unless the Knicks win a championship. G?
So, May 23rd episode of our show, when we put the exclamation point on the Knicks season, I brought up two players as Nick targets. One was Ingram. The second was Bridges. And when I said
I told you they would never do it.
That's exactly what
I told you. They would never do it, and I was wrong.
Yeah. Listen, if you're the Nets, it gives you basically all the picks back that you've traded away, and then some, right? Again, they're not.
Now you're trading your top 10 picks, and you're getting picks 25 and below, most likely. Well, listen, the Knicks could get three injuries in a season, and they can get a pick in the lottery, but you don't know.
Well, listen, you know, they wind up with two 25s and a second round 25, which we will assume probably won't be too good because that would be next year. Mm-hmm. A 27, which who the hell knows, you know, 3 years from now. And then you get a 28 first round swap, a 29 and a 31. So it you know, if you were more immediate with your picks, I could tell you, yeah, they're going to be horrible. We have no idea what the Knicks are going to look like in 3 or 4 years. Right. I can tell you what I think for the next 2 years, 3 years, but going out 4 and 5 years, who the hell knows about the 29 round, the 31 first round. But listen,
and 29, the Nets already have 3 number ones. I mean, that would make it 4. I mean, so you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know if they're going to trade futures to move up. You don't. The Nets are about to sign Nick Claxton to a long term deal. Keep him around in Brooklyn. Again, the Nets are going to be one of the worst 3-4 teams in the league next year, most likely. Yep. But what they've done is they've given themselves a future. What the Knicks did was what the Knicks are trying to do, or it looks like trying to do by bringing Anunoby back as well, which you got to love, is they are trying to match the Celtics. They are trying to say that we're going to play the same wing game you're going to play, only better. The only answer they don't have, because they're probably not going to be able to get Hartenstein now, is rumored to go to either Memphis or OKC, is that they are going to have to match up with Porzingis, and the importance of Mitchell Robinson being healthy and being someone that they can put out there just to be annoying for him against the Porzingis is important. But Porzingis doesn't always stay healthy either. So, but that's the one area where the Celtics would have a definitive advantage. But the Knicks did these two moves to match up with the Celtics. And now Bridges, who averaged 19 points a game last year, he's a solid player, really good. Non-all-star for this kind of haul. Probably, I think it's the biggest haul ever for a non-all-star. But the fact is that with Bridges as a 2 or 3 or 4th option.
Great 3-and-D guy, too. Great 3-and-D guy.
Well, him and Anunoby on the defensive side are going to make the Knicks so dangerous. Brunson's the leader. DiVincenzo goes back to his role. Hart doesn't have to play 47 minutes anymore. Lots of pretty cool things happen from this for the Knicks, and they're all in. I mean, you know, that's basically what the move is. They're all in. Interesting thing about re-signing Anunoby, his agent, Leon Rose's son. So you knew that there was a chance that that deal would get done because the Rose has done such a good job with the Knicks. You figured he could talk to his son about making sure that he found out what they were looking to be, and it looks like that's done. They're mortgaging a bit of the future, but in their eyes, they think that they're that one player away from the championship, and I think that they really have a shot now. Yeah. That East is open.
The big thing seems to be for them to keep Hartenstein, he's going to have to take a lower number than what he's probably going to get elsewhere, right? And then there's probably some configuring with the Nick contracts they're going to have to pull off to get there. Now, whether or not that means a trade with Mitchell Robinson, I heard today someone was suggesting a trade with Julius Randle. You know, to me, I don't like that because now you're taking away another strength and weakening yourself elsewhere. Hartenstein is good. I like him. I'd love him here. I do not know if they're going to have enough cap space to get him signed. You know, if here's the thing, though, Darren. If he wants to be here, the Knicks are going to offer him whatever they can offer him, right? So
they're going to do what they can. Absolutely.
He's under whatever the bird rights. So the Knicks can make him a solid offer, but he's going to be able to make more elsewhere based on how well he played last year combined with the market. So that's really where we are. Are they able to bring him back? I think we're going to see.
Brunson. Well, here's the good news about it. I mean, and the draft is on right now. And you mentioned right before we got started that Zach Edey was when it goes to Memphis. Memphis was one of the two squads rumored for Hartenstein. Now, it doesn't mean that they can't get Edey and Hartenstein and let him learn underneath him, but they may not want to put all their resources toward a big. And if that's the case, then maybe that takes one of the suitors out. So that you're just trying to figure out what is the, I don't know, what's going to be the right move for the Knicks. They're going to have to find a big body to go in there. Maybe they feel like if they keep Mitchell Robinson and they take the young guys and try to develop them a little bit more, because they're going to be playing a lot of, three and four wings. You're going to see Hart a lot at the four. You're going to see a lot of things that are unorthodox for the Knicks, but still very much, very competitive. It's a group of guys that played together for a long time in college. Now they get all together here. They do a podcast together, three of them. It's a very close-knit group, and you've got to imagine that the chemistry on the Knicks should be off the charts next year.
And coming off last season, the Knicks fans are going to love Bridges in this arena. Another Nova guy. They're gonna love this. Add on the fact that they re-signed OG Anunoby. I think this really puts a lot of stuff on. I think right now the only thing that we're gonna have to find out is, are they gonna have enough room and are they able to sign Hartenstein? And then I think from there, I don't know how much, there may be another veteran guy coming off some minimum that they may sign, but for the most part, that's probably going to be it for this, what they have. They have two picks coming up at 24 and 25, so we'll see what that's about.
Wouldn't be surprised if one of them's a young guy that they stash away for a couple of years as well. So we'll see what happens. The other thing is the draft's going on, and we talk about it, and used to be one of my favorite nights of the year. The draft has changed so dramatically, though, now. Now it's really this. It's really guys get picked based on potential, analytics, and body type. It has nothing to do with what they've accomplished, has nothing to do from what you've seen. The guy that went first in the draft tonight, the French kid, and I'm blanking on his name. Give me one second. I'll look it up because I forgot.
Richer
or something like that.
Richer.
I mean, with the pros, got this body, he's a defensive guy, doesn't create his own shot very well, not a great offensive player, but the potential is they draft him number one on a guy that they're hoping can grow into the role. That's where the NBA is now. Try to get 18 and 19-year-olds to have the perfect body. I'm not saying that it's awful. I like watching players that are I think this Villanova thing kind of proves a little bit to you. Guys that played in college, that learned how to play together, were part of a roster, part of a team, you know, were coached properly, and may not. I mean, Josh Hart is not the guy that you look at as the prototypical NBA body. Michael Bridges is, you know, Mikal Bridges is, but Hart is not. Brunson is not. DiVincenzo, maybe, but I mean, but it's not. It may be maybe one and a half out of the four guys, and yet the Knicks are going to build around this four-man nucleus along with Anunoby for the next level. So I just don't like the way that the draft is done now. Jake?
So a couple of points on the draft. One, there really isn't a couple of dynamite players coming out of college this particular year that are number one potential picks. So I think that takes away from it, right? But then what you have is you have a lot of foreign guys that are now in this draft. You know, we're through 13 picks, and you got three guys from France and one guy from Serbia, which we really haven't seen a lot of. And you also got two guys from League Ignite in here. So, you know, six of the 13 players we didn't watch last year during the college tournament play. So,
and even the ones you did watch,
away from me, you know,
I mean, Devin Carter, you got to watch for a couple of years at Providence if you watched the college game. You know, Klingon, you got to watch for a couple of years. Castle, no, 1 year wasn't the go-to guy in at UConn. Klingon, you did, but people don't value the center position like they used to. Dillingham played 1 year at Kentucky. He had good games and bad games. It wasn't anything where you were like, wow, you know, Dillingham's just dynamite. And yep. I'm just saying that it's
– No, I agree.
It's really just all about potential and has absolutely nothing to do with what these guys have accomplished. Yeah. And it's not nearly as fun. In the NFL draft, you've seen these guys play in college. You know what they can do. You see the potential. And then they go through the analytics. It's all analytics. And length, and nobody gives – and wingspan, who cares? Yep. Nobody cares.
I agree. Because
most of these guys do not make it, and that's what happens.
All right, we're going to move over to golf. Scottie Scheffler wins the Travelers this weekend. It was his sixth title of the year. He's now up to $28 million in total. He wins on a playoff with Tom Kim after protesters interrupted the 18th hole. Lasted a couple of minutes, but nevertheless, it was interrupted. The playoff hole, Tom Kim, he played well that day, did not win the playoff hole. Scottie Scheffler wins. An amazing sixth title of the year, which is just ridiculous. Anything on Scottie Scheffler there?
Well, Kim actually fought back. Kim led, then Scheffler took over. Kim came back. But then Scheffler took him in the first playoff round. Listen, it's a really close event. It's right up in Connecticut for us. We actually should probably try to go 1 year, which we never have. But, I mean, it's just kind of an interesting thing because a lot of good players play in it. Scottie's just having one of those years. The thing that sucks for golf right now is that DeChambeau's having the same year on LIV, and you wish you were watching these guys go head-to-head on a weekly basis. But because of this division, we don't get to see it. And you know that it hurts. It really is. Yep. It would be an amazing battle back and forth between two superstars. And unfortunately we're not getting it. Congrats to Kim for finishing second, you know, and congrats obviously to Scottie for being the best player in the world. You know, that's pretty much it.
Before we move to Major League Baseball, you want to talk about the College World Series for a minute?
Yeah. So Tennessee moves on. You know, pretty exciting stuff in that series. Tennessee lost game one to Texas A&M, came back and won game two, and they went to game three. And it was at the same night as the NHL game seven. So it wasn't getting necessarily the amount of fanfare that you would expect. So Tennessee jumps on them early. A&M cuts it to 3-1. Tennessee stretches out to 5-1 and then hits a base hit. I'm blanking on the runner's name, but he comes home and does an amazing slide on the inside to avoid the tag. They go up 6-1. You're not thinking anything of it, but that's the winning run right there with just an unbelievable slide. And basically A&M then starts to mount a comeback, cuts it to 6-3, gets it to 6-5, then a strikeout to end the game. And, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, it was a good series, went all three games. Final game decided by one run in the final inning. And then you get the negative of college sports right after that. Jim Schlossnagel, who's the head coach of A&M, gets asked, oh, there's a rumor that you might go to Texas. And he gets all upset about it. And within 24 hours, he takes the Texas job. So whenever I sit here and criticize players for jumping and transferring so much and making it so hard to watch, watching a coach do that to his team after he took him to the College World Series, just because they were together at TCU, the AD and him, it's just not good form. You just took a team to the final and you just went to the biggest rival that they have. Now in the same division as well, same conference, I should say. It's just a different world. But the College World Series, you know, these guys with the aluminum bats hit the ball a ton. Last year we got to see Paul Skeens win it, and we'll see what Tennessee produces, but they have a lot of great players, so it'll be exciting to see. And congratulations to the Vols, and I'm sorry for the Aggies that they have to deal with a guy like Schlossnagel, who one day after, you know, losing the final moves on to your biggest competitor. And it's not like Texas A&M doesn't have deep pockets too, so it's just I thought it was poor form.
Yep. All right. We'll move over to Major League Baseball. So let's go through a couple of things that have happened in the last week before we talk about Yankees Mets. Mm-hmm. Yankees made a trade. They brought in J.D. Davis from Oakland for a couple of minor leaguers.
Needed to do it.
This after losing Rizzo for 6 to 8 weeks and then Stanton for 4 weeks with a hamstring. Scherzer came back, pitched 5 innings of 1 hit, no walk ball. He struck out 4 on 57 pitches. Injuries seem to be mounting this week in baseball. Bednar on the IL, Leiter with the Cubs on the IL, Tatis with the Padres on the IL. Edwin Diaz got ejected. We'll come back to that in a minute for sticky stuff on his hands. It comes with a 10-game ban. Braves acquired Dallas Keuchel today from Seattle for a minor leaguer. And the Phillies pulled off a triple play Monday night. It was a 1-3-5 in the third inning. It's the first time since 1929 that a 1-3-5 triple play has happened.
95 years.
First and third, nobody out. The players are – the runners are running on the play. It's a comeback liner right to the pitcher. He throws to first. He throws to third. And it's a triple play. So that's where we are with baseball, with up to date what's going on. So let's talk about the Mets. They're 8-2 in their last 10. They are, before today, 38-39. Alvarez is back in the lineup and hitting. J.D. Martinez keeps hitting. Vientos is hitting the crap out of the ball right now. Lindor is back hitting the ball. They're getting great pitching for Severino. And they've gotten 7 wins out of Reed Garrett in the pen, by the way. Reed Garrett, yep. 57 strikeouts, 17 walks so far. So he's pitched excellent out of the pen. Mets are playing very well. We'll talk about the Yankees in a minute. Darren, any baseball points? And we could talk about the Mets to start.
Yeah, I mean, listen, like I said, I think it was like 2 weeks ago or last week, whatever it was. You know, the Mets are going to be this type of team all year. They're going to have runs where they're up and runs where they're down. Do I ever think they're going to get 6 to 8 games above 500? No. But do I think they're going to fall anywhere behind 6 or 8 games below 500 again? No. The question mark on this team is still going to be the starting pitching and even the bullpen. And now with the loss of Diaz, who didn't even, put up a protest against it, you know, dropped his appeal, you know, it becomes... You know, now you got to figure out what they're going to do to close games. And it happened last night. They were up 9-3 on the Yanks. They go to the bullpen. Judge hits the grand slam 9-7. If Gleyber could run a ball out, something could be interesting. He got benched tonight for that. We'll talk about that later. Mm-hmm. But the bullpen is not good. The starting rotation outside of Severino has not really been very good. Quintana has to be better. He's the guy. He's the veteran. He's got to figure out how to get them 5 2/3, 6 innings on a nightly basis. Severino's been better than they could have expected. He was the worst pitcher statistically in the major leagues last year. And he's come back well. you know, and they've gotten some, you know, gritty performances out of McGill, I should say, and a couple of other guys. I mean, they just need a little bit more out of there, because that offense was always going to eventually move things. What we didn't realize, we all thought Alvarez was really good. We didn't realize he was the emotional leader on this team until this year.
I agree.
That's where the difference has come. It's not Lindor, and it's certainly not Alonso. I'm not trying to insult Pete. I mean, they're putting up numbers and stuff like that, and they're hitting the ball. But JD Martinez, you know, as a veteran leader, and Alvarez behind the plate with that pitching staff has been a world of difference.
Absolutely.
They're right now leading the Yankees in a rain delay. I don't know if they're out of the delay yet. They were when we started the show. But they're up in this game. If they win, they're going to go to 500. And, you know, listen, it's a team that's definitely got flaws, but I think almost every team in Major League Baseball has flaws right now. So the Mets are alive and well and fighting for a playoff spot, my friend.
So two things. One, I think, and listen, we've talked on and off about a lot of the hitters coming back to the back of their baseball card after what looked like just a disastrous, you know, first month of the season. I think what it does on a really good note is it probably keeps Alonso here for the rest of the year. Do the Mets resign
him? Absolutely.
You know, well, but here's the thing. If they were horrible, Darren, there may have been talk about him being traded. I think that
Agreed. Is
totally wiped out now, right? I'm going to give you a name I think the Mets need to try to acquire. It's a hitter. And it's Luis Robert from the Chicago White Sox.
Listen, I think everybody should acquire him.
No, but I think that's a real good fit for this Met team. Middle of the lineup bat. If you have to DH him, you can. I know JD is basically going to occupy that spot right now, but he can play the outfield. He can, if you need him to DH, he can. Good bat. And, you know, that's the type of guy in the middle of that lineup all of a sudden lengthens the top of that lineup a little bit more. And I think that's a really good fit. And listen, the same way Martinez lengthened the lineup, I think this one is another one that lengthens that lineup. So, all right. So let's move to the Yankees. So they are not playing some great ball right now. Cole looks like he's going through a long spring training moment. Yeah. Okay. And, you know, I saw a quote from Cashman, which was, you know, he was asked why they brought him up so soon. And he said, because even if he gives us four or five innings every start, it's probably better than four or five innings from a six starter. And he's probably right. Okay. You know, they are not getting the corner production. And I talked about this in the offseason. They're not getting the corner production that I want. Now Rizzo's out 6 to 8 weeks with a broken forearm. And listen, you don't know what he's going to be when he comes back now. He's come back from a broken
forearm. He hasn't been anything before.
No, but he's come back from a broken forearm now. I mean, you really don't know what he's going to be, especially power-wise, right? So they're playing Ben Rice at first at the moment, last couple of games. They're playing DJ LeMahieu at third. We all know about, like, DJ LeMahieu thoughts. I won't keep going through them. They just brought in J.D. Davis. He is not the big-time first or third baseman you want, but he can provide some production. He's got a decent bat. I like it. I went through some stuff. I'm going to throw some names at you as potential trade targets, and I bring this up because we're getting close to July 1st, so this is the time, right?
Absolutely.
So big names, okay? Big names. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is out there as a big-name target.
Arenado, and now he says he's willing to play for the Yankees. 2 years ago, he would not.
Arenado's a big-name target. Goldschmidt's a big-name target. Now, the Cardinals have come back.
But St. Louis is in the race over there. St. Louis is in that race, though.
And that's exactly what I was going to say. The Cardinals at this moment are two games over 500, so they've come back into the pack. But here is the trade, Darren. You ready?
Okay, I'm listening.
And it's going to cost you a couple of minor leaguers, and it may cost you somebody really good. Putting that out there, okay? It's a trade with the Marlins, and it's Josh Bell and Tanner Scott. Tanner Scott with the wipeout slider gets into the bullpen. Is he the typical closer that you want? Does he close over homes? Maybe, maybe not. Gives you a definitely another option to close. And Josh Bell comes in and plays first base, gives you the big bat I want to play first base. Can hit the ball out of the ballpark in any at bat. What do you think?
I think Josh Bell could be had for a song. I think that they would love to get rid of that contract. Scott would be the one guy that you have to pay for. Listen, I don't have a problem with it. I mean, I would love to think bigger for my corner, but there aren't a lot of bigger guys to get. I'm all right with giving Ben Rice an opportunity right now to see what he can do for a little bit, but I have no problem with your trade. The Yankees, unfortunately for them, you know, Dominguez would have been up by now with the injuries that just came in, but then he got hurt for 8 weeks. And, you know, the depth in the infield got banged up with some injuries as well in the minor leagues. So what they were counting on from their AAA isn't there. But Dominguez being the one guy that we all wanted. But, and it looked like he'd be back July 1st or mid-June. Now it's end of August. So, you know, he's out. But so Dominguez, they need to make a move.
Dominguez does not change your first third situation, which I've been complaining about.
But the problem with the Yankees isn't just the first third situation. Problem with the Yankees is that they have two batters that if you pitch around, you can get out of innings.
Yes.
All right. Torres is not all of a sudden you can't expect Torres to start hitting because he's just not. You know, Verdugo is a clutch kind of guy. You like him, but he's not going to hit regularly. You know, Grisham gives you a great glove out there as a backup, but you know, as bad as he's a 200 hitter lately. You know, LeMahieu is the worst kind of he's maybe a slight upgrade of Jeff McNeil, a guy that doesn't hit for power anymore, doesn't hit for average anymore, and doesn't have any range. It's like, what are you getting out of him? Rice at least is young, so you want to see if he finds a way. Maybe he produces the Greg Bird type, couple of months, but that's about it. I mean, I'm good with that move. I would like it completely. If we could do it, it depends on who we have to give up, and you're going to have to give up a couple of arms for it, and you're going to have to probably, because of where Miami is right now, you're probably looking at more, you know, low prospects, A and double A, than you are looking at triple A just because they're that far away.
Yeah, I'm Jazz Chisholm
and not much more. I mean, Alcantara comes back. You don't know what he's going to be, but if he comes back, y'all have a couple of arms, but they don't have a couple of bats. Yep. So, yeah, listen, I'm all for it. And Florida's a team that's out of it. Bednar was a guy I thought that could go either for the Mets or the Yankees. Now he's a little bit banged up. I would love to see him come over here and be my stopper. He hasn't had a good year, but he still gets the strikeouts in big spots. And then you sit there and watch a guy like Josh Hader, who the Yankees let walk out the door and would have solved all the bullpen problems, in my opinion.
Yeah.
The Yankees aren't playing well, but the fact of the matter, Gino, is neither is Baltimore, neither is Tampa, neither is Toronto. So the Yankees are able to mask the fact that they haven't they've won one series in their last six because of the fact that nobody else is really challenging them. Boston's been playing well, but even with that, they're 8.5 out. So going into tonight. So,
listen,
the Yankees need to get another bat in that lineup. They just do.
They're 23 games over 500 before today. So I'm not – this is criticism. Absolutely. This criticism based on the last couple of weeks. And the criticism of, for me, the first and third base situation, which I've been complaining about, you know, back to in the offseason. So, you know.
Well, the thing is, even if Rizzo was playing, G, he hadn't been playing well.
I agree.
He's one homer since May. He was an answer anyway. Yep, so losing Rizzo doesn't kill you, but they do need to add someone that's a bat. He's a good glove, but he doesn't hit.
Yeah.
And we all root for him and we like him, and he still doesn't hit.
Yeah.
You got to find someone. I mean, listen, other teams seem to find guys out of nowhere that can hit 25 homers and play first base a little bit or 22 homers. Yankees can't seem to do it.
We have got to find somebody. Problem in a while. Going into tonight, you had seven American League teams over 500. You had six NL teams over 500 going into today before today's games. And it was Yankees, Baltimore, Boston, Cleveland, Minnesota, Kansas City, Seattle, Houston right at the 40-40 market before today. Philly, Atlanta, Milwaukee, St. Louis, L.A., and San Diego all over 500. Mets right at the cusp. If they win tonight, they're at 500.
Well, Houston actually won today to get the 500. They were 39-40 coming in. So they won it today to get the 500. They leapfrogged Texas, and they are, you know, Houston is threatening to be in the playoffs for the eighth straight year.
Any stats you want to throw out? I mean, Otani's hitting.
Yeah, just a couple.
Good.
Yeah, I mean, your batting average, you know, you only have 13 guys hitting 300 or better. Otani, 320. Profar, 317. Ozuna, 311. Arias, 310. So the top four guys are National League guys. Two Padres, by the way. And then and none of them named Tatis or Machado. And then Witt hitting 309 is the leader of the American League. OPS still Judge with a 1.128. His stats are actually better than they were when he had the 62 home run season, which is really incredible. Home runs are tied. Ribbies are up. OPS is up. Everything else is up. Otani is at a 1.032 right now. Soto, the third guy, over with a 1.004. This is the the best up to this part of the season ever in rating WAR also, which is kind of crazy. And I'm not a WAR guy, by the way, but when they get a stat like that, you jump on it. Home runs, Judge has 29, but looks amazing. Gunner's got 25. I mean, yeah, it's not like he's that far back. You know, no one's talking about him because Judge has been so good, but Gunner's a stud.
He is.
Otani, 24. Ozuna, 21. Ramirez, 21. And Santander, 21 as well. So Baltimore's got two guys in the top. Ribbies, Judge 75 and Ramirez 72, Bohm 64, Ozuna 64, Otani 60. So, you know, Bohm has been a stunner to me. Ozuna's bounced back. You know, you thought he would hit, but not like this. Ramirez continues to always hit. And Otani and Judge, you kind of expected. Pitching wise, Lugo and Sale and Suarez are the 3-10 game winners in the league. They're all 10-2. Lugo with a 229 and a whip of 105. Sale with a 291 with a whip of 093. And Suarez with a 201 ERA and a whip of 093. Gill is at 9-2. And, you know, and Sonny Gray's right there with 8-2. He just doesn't pitch well in New York, but everywhere else, this guy finds a way. Helsley leading the way in saves. You know, interesting stats. The fact that Finnegan has 22 saves where you didn't even know if he would hold the closer job is pretty impressive. Yeah. Suarez taking over in San Diego with 20, along with Iglesias in Atlanta with 20 as well. So lots of good stats. Like you said, 13 teams over 500. You know, it's wide open. The playoffs are right there for the New York Metropolitans.
Absolutely.
And the playoffs are right there for the New York Yankees. Jake?
One other stat, Elly De La Cruz is at 37 stolen bases, on pace as of this morning for 74. Which is just ridiculous.
And Bryce Terang is 27. 27, it's not too shabby.
10 behind.
He's not going to catch Elly, who is starting to hit, and as is Cincinnati, and that NL Central could get exciting as Pittsburgh is playing a little bit. Some games, you know, they've had some stretches, then they drop some. The Cubs actually have had a worse bullpen than the Mets. They've led so many games after seven that they've blown. It's ridiculous. And it's stunning how bad that their record is.
I want to break in right now. The Lakers are on the clock at 17. Bronny has not been picked. Do you think this is Bronny?
No. To be honest with you, Bronny shouldn't be picked.
I agree.
If he gets picked, that wasn't his father insisted. And we did touch on Reddick for a second. How do you like dropping the F-bomb in your freaking opening press conference? I never liked J.J. Redick as a player. He's pompous and arrogant. He's a smart guy. I'm not trying to take that away from him. The way he talks about older players, Bob Cousy was, you know, guarded by plumbers. And he's a real, real pompous ass. And I hope, to God, another reason to root against the Lakers is the idiocy of one J.J. Redick.
No coaching experience, and he's going to coach the Lakers? I mean,
He's probably LeBron's choice, Jake. He's probably LeBron's choice.
All right. We'll move over to soccer, Darren. I know you had a couple of points you want to go
through. Just a little bit. I mean,
Just two things. Euro 2024, the 16 teams have qualified. You got some pretty pretty interesting next round matches, but we're on the knockout stage now. So if you are a soccer fan and you want to watch, you know, sudden death type soccer, the loser goes home, that's what you're going to get starting on Saturday. It kicks off with Italy and Switzerland, which is a big time matchup. But you got, you know, I think France and Belgium playing each other. You got Denmark and Germany. You got a lot of good heavyweight matchups just to start. Teams like Georgia and Slovenia making it. You don't expect them to qualify. If you remember last Euro, Italy won it. But the time before that, Iceland won it. So the Euro sometimes gets the upset. So Turkey had a big win today to qualify. I mean, so you got a lot of squads you don't necessarily expect. And apparently my dog is getting upset about something. Oh, I think it's the bug zapper. But nonetheless, you know, it's just it's fun soccer right now. And then when we get to Copa America, the U.S. has played their first game. They beat Bolivia 2-0. They kind of controlled it. You know, it's early on. The biggest surprise there was that Brazil, you know, tied, you know, in their opener with Costa Rica. They held to a 0-0 tie. So, you know, we'll see what happens on Copa America. It's always fun when the countries play each other. We got the Olympics coming up in a few weeks. So let the pride of nations begin. And it's always so sad to me how every other country sings their national anthem so proudly, and the Americans look like they don't know what the hell to do. And Dalton Connect is the Lakers pick.
Goes to the Lakers. That's a good pick.
Yep. Well, listen, he was a college guy that we all saw.
That was a good pick.
Absolutely. So that's what I had on soccer. Not a lot. Okay. Just to touch on where we are. We'll get a little bit more into it. The only other thing I wanted to mention was football a little bit. The promos for Hard Knocks are coming out. You're a huge Hard Knocks guy. I am not. You are. The Giants are who they're going to feature now. And then they're going to do the AFC, I guess, in season. So you're going to get a lot of the Giants now. And you excited about it, G? Is that getting you pumped up for football or not really?
Yeah, no.
I don't watch it every year.
So, here is actually going to be interesting because you're going to get the Giants off season, and then you're going to get the part of the Jets in season because they're going to feature the AFC East.
No, it's not the Jets. It's going to be it's the Bengals. It's Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, Cleveland, and Baltimore.
I thought it was. All right,
North. But even still, though, but last year we had the Jets, and we had enough of the Jets. Yeah. Let's see what happens with the Giants. I'll be watching it because it's the Giants. I don't normally watch it. I watched it, obviously, last year for the Jets, but just because I want to stay on top of how the Giants are looking. It'll be interesting. But I know you love it.
I do. I like Hard Knocks. I like it a lot. I just started looking into some football prep, so for fantasy football. Just initial stuff. Usually July 1st is when I really start looking at stuff. So I just started looking at it. Should be interesting. I got one point for you before we go, and that is we have had 17 picks in the NBA draft so far. So you have 6 picks before the Knicks pick twice. I am hoping they wind up with one of the centers, either Filipowski or Missy from Baylor. I'm hoping one of those two centers makes it to one of their picks. I'd like to see one of those guys here. So
I'm fine with Missy. I don't want to see Filipowski anywhere near this team. He's a dirty, crappy player.
And that I would like to see him here playing with the Dover guys.
The one thing I'll say about Dalton Connect, 2 years ago, this guy's playing at Northern Colorado in obscurity. Gets transfers to Tennessee. They decided to make him the go-to guy. He was the go-to guy in Northern Colorado, too, don't get me wrong. But not a lot of people are visiting Greeley to watch them play on a nightly basis. So it's, you know, nothing wrong with Greeley, Colorado. I'm sure it's beautiful. But not a lot of people have been. Absolutely. He gets to come on over and showcase his talents. And, you know, he stood – I mean, he averaged 20 points a game in Northern Colorado, but – you know, doing 22 points a game almost at Tennessee is a totally different animal. Got to see him in the tournament, came up short against Zach Edey and those guys. But that's where the transfer portal works for a guy going from a smaller school to a bigger school and actually, you see a senior get drafted, which you don't see very often. In you know, usually everybody wants to draft someone that's 17 years old and has a wingspan that can touch the moon by jumping off the, you know, jumping 3 feet in the air. Then to get a regular guy is kind of interesting.
Yep, agreed. Agreed.
Anything else you want to touch on, my friend, before we wrap up?
That's it. I think we can wrap up.
All right. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Darren here with Gino. Kevin on sabbatical tonight, but he'll be back next week. Talk about the wonderful, wild, and wacky world of sports. A wacky world of sports where a triple play for a 1-3-5 is done for the first time in 95 years. And that the Nets are able to Mikal Bridges is able to say, I want to get traded to the Knicks. And the Nets say, okay, to walk this ride. However you like your sports, you know, we love them too. Be sure to download the podcast anywhere you get a podcast, whether it be an Apple product, TuneIn, Spotify, whatever you like. Follow us on Facebook, like Gino said earlier. Again, we're growing big. We post a lot. Want you to post back. Don't just like us though. Like us and tell us what you're thinking. Make a comment. We want comments. We need comments. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you.